across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the state of Wiscommon Sense here on the shores of Lake Wissota, where it's a beautiful day up north on this Friday, June 23rd, 65 degrees up here on the lake. Folks are listening on 93.5 The Tap. It is 59 in Green Bay right now, Waukesha 55, Madison 56, La Crosse 66, and Hayward 60 as we tickle 90 degrees one final time. And then we head into a weekend that's going to be a bit more volatile as a front finally makes its way into the Badger State. We'll get the full forecast details from Weatherology coming up in just over an hour. Well, here's what's on tap this morning. First off, first and foremost, I always told you it would be a heist. We have done about 200 radio shows since this program began last year. And one of the first predictions I told you about was that Republican legislators were never going to use a multi-billion dollar record budget surplus to make sound fiscal investments in Wisconsin's future. It was always going to be a heist. Now, with Thursday's announcement and adoption of a tax cut plan skewed to the super wealthy, Republican lawmakers are getting set to clean out the vault. We'll talk about that. We'll also hear from Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil about some of the big stories of the week. Then in our next hour, progressives are understandably excited for Janet Protasiewicz to be sworn in as justice on August 1st, a move that will tip the state Supreme Court to liberal control for the first time in more than 15 years. But a longtime advocate for ending gerrymandered political maps in Wisconsin wants to make sure that folks understand things like the rigged maps and an 1849 abortion ban. They're not going to be fixed on August 2nd just because Janet Protasiewicz takes over on August 1st. So we'll get a feel for what the process will actually look like over the coming weeks and months. We'll also talk to Mark Jacob about media coverage of the latest discovery of corruption in the U.S. Supreme Court and what this says about a press corps that covers the Supreme Court full time, year after year, getting scooped by people who don't. And then we'll talk to Dan Schumacher about weekend sports and then also about his new sports-related gig that he just started up north. Along the way, we'd love to have you join us, 844-967-2789, to tell us what's on your mind. If you'd rather put pen to paper via the keyboard, of course, then you can use our email address, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And if you are watching this live video feed of this radio show on a Facebook page, put a comment there. We might put it up. One comment came after the fact, so I wanted to share that one. It was from Ardith via Facebook, and she wrote, "I feel so lucky and grateful to have Lisa Subek representing me in the state legislature. She is a fierce fighter for human rights. The combination of Dr. Kristen Lyerly and Representative Subek gives me hope for the future of Wisconsin. I really enjoy and appreciate the programs when they are together discussing important issues facing all of us." A very nice sentiment from one of the folks commenting on Facebook. And again, we always appreciate the input to keep people like me and Aaron honest so that Aaron Sommers and I don't just goof around here for 2 hours every morning. Aaron, how are you?
Doing well. Yeah, I completely agree with that comment from Ardith on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. And folks are invited to do that anytime. We look at the comments that come across on Facebook, Instagram throughout the day. Of course, we're monitoring Twitter, and your phone calls always mean a lot too. We know it's early in the morning. A lot of folks aren't ready to clear their pipes and dial up the phone, but we're here for you for the serious stuff as well as the frivolity. Speaking of the frivolity, Mr. Sommers, what are you up to this weekend?
Packing. Because
you're getting set to move, aren't you?
Yep. Todd's okay. Moving yesterday and today. I am moving next Thursday.
And I felt like I was moving last week with the carpet project. And this weekend's project is to move it all back. We've been doing it in drips and drabs. And now that it's supposed to rain for times this weekend, we're just going to get that all taken care of once and for all. Hey, when Luke Mathers was here yesterday, we got a little carried away doing music critiques and kind of forgot you know, to do things like promote some of the weekend shows and such. Did you get a chance to preview Charlie Behrens and the Cripes cast for this weekend?
Yes. And it's actually, I mean, I like them all personally, but it is a very interesting episode. His guest is Mary Jo Wheeler-Schuler, who is the, I don't remember the position, I think president of the Wheeler. It's a big auto company foundation. And she and Charlie talk about EVs and charging stations around the state and the kind of infrastructure we would need to have that more widely adopted, make it easier to travel everywhere, just having an electric vehicle, and the obstacles we face, the pros and cons. I'll give you a hint. It's mostly pros.
Well, good. Okay. So, and the Cripes cast is still noon Saturday and Sunday, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. And then there's a whole pass of other shows, including best ofs, like the best of this nice radio program here. And so for all of that, you can go to civicmedia.us and then look for the various stations. You can look for individual shows. You can look for individual stations. When you get to the individual station, you can look at their schedule and find out what shows are airing, because different stations have some variation in shows over the weekend. And, you know, you can catch them all anytime over at the Civic Media website. And you can also get the newly refreshed Civic Media app, which will let your phone do so much more to follow what we're doing and even take part in it as well. All right. Having said all those nice things about the place where it's kind of my avocation, I will talk about the places that you can see at the people that give me a paycheck, Up North News, and some of today's headlines, including that heist coming up next. You're up now.
Well, you done me, and you bet I felt it. I tried to beat you, but you're so hot that I melted. I fell right through the
cracks. It's been a week of weird birthdays where people, you just, they're not the age you expect. Jason Mraz turns 45 today. We'll have that and more music news and history lesson coming up a little bit later on this hour. Now, over at UpNorthNewsWI.com, that's our homepage for Up North News, a separate entity from Civic Media. We've got a couple of stories that will help you get more detail on things that we've only been able to spend a moment or two talking about here. For example, the details on Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito under fire for accepting a luxury fishing trip from a conservative donor who then had business before the court, and Alito didn't recuse himself. Also, the state assembly has passed a sweeping bill to overhaul the state's liquor laws. Again, we talked about it briefly early in the week, but you can get more details at the story on our website. And then on social media, search for Up North News WI to make sure that you get to the right place. You'll see posts like J.J. Watt going to be inducted into the Wisconsin Athletic Hall of Fame this fall. And in the newsletter, a continuing series on restaurants in Wisconsin that have been featured on the Food Network. And I'm very happy to see this one, the Norske Nook in Osseo. They also have a location I frequent up in Rice Lake and some amazing pies. And so look to Up North News for coverage of all these stories about Wisconsin news, features, stories, people. We'd love to have you along subscribing to our newsletter. Click newsletter in the top banner at UpNorthNewsWI.com. Brewers are off yesterday. They're in Cleveland now, getting set to start a weekend series against the Guardians. Chris Middleton opted to become a free agent rather than re-sign with the Milwaukee Bucks, and we'll talk more about that and other NBA draft notes with Dan Schumacher a little bit later on in the program. Well, as I mentioned before, it was always going to be a heist. The heist is real, and it was made official in the Joint Finance Committee of the legislature on Thursday, as Republicans did what Joe Zepecki yesterday, you know, gave them credit for, in that they waited till the very end. And as we saw them zero out idea after idea after idea for the state budget from Governor Tony Evers, we always knew they were at the end going to say, well, we've allocated what we wanted to, and we're going to shovel all the rest of it into tax cuts. And these tax cuts will be heavily skewed toward the heavily wealthy. And that's exactly what they did. Even though they have heard for months on end about the opportunities that exist to invest in Wisconsin, to invest in Wisconsin families and small businesses, and large businesses and broadband and infrastructure. They opted instead to use at least half of the $7 billion surplus for tax cuts that, again, focus most of the reductions on the wealthiest filers. Do you know your income tax brackets, your state income tax brackets? Chances are you do not. And so to the extent that this is the way that you would handle a tax cut, it probably puts you in line more with what Governor Tony Evers was proposing, which also was a tax cut, but geared much more toward the middle income brackets rather than the highest ones. But the highest earners, these are top earners in the state who, as a married couple, earn more than $405,000 a year. Their tax rate will go down from 7.65 to 6.5%. That's about a 15% reduction for the wealthiest households in the state. Now, for the middle there, and it's a big range from $405,000 all the way down to $36,000, roughly. That tax rate goes from 5.3% to 4.4%. And so that's about a 17% cut. Again, it's nothing to sneeze at, but it's also doing very little with what you as a taxpayer would expect your legislature to do if the ability came up to make some long overdue fixes to systems or purchases or efficiencies. But the Republican mentality is that government doesn't work, and that the best way to prove that is to make things worse while you're running the government. And so there are long lines right now, waiting lists for professional licenses. There weren't the investments necessary to improve the systems that are there, just as the same thing happened with unemployment checks at the beginning of the pandemic. The Scott Walker administration had known for years that the system, the computer system there, was antiquated. It was rooted in computer code from the 1960s. But they didn't make the necessary improvements. And then when checks were running late, they said, oh, this government, it doesn't work. Let's cut it because it's not very efficient. And they get credit for cutting people's taxes, but they were elected to be stewards of the government to run it efficiently. And they've decided not to. They decided that after Governor Evers and childcare providers and working parents didn't just ask, but were begging to continue the Child Care Counts program with $340 million from that surplus, Republicans turned that dollar amount to zero to pay for tax cuts for the rich. The federal government is putting in money for broadband expansion, but state government has continued to put in money to get high-speed internet out to everybody in Wisconsin. Everybody deserves that. The state legislature this year, Republicans turned that dollar amount to zero so that more of the surplus could go to tax cuts for the rich. Families and small businesses have been asking for paid family and medical leave, as they're doing in Minnesota and other states. It's a great way to recruit and retain workers. It saves money in the long run, as people don't have to burn up as many sick days or leave their job. The Republicans changed that number to $0 so that they could use more of the surplus for tax cuts for the rich. And for a decade now, Wisconsin Republicans have wasted our tax dollars by refusing to accept federal dollars to expand Medicaid and provide stable health care coverage to more working families who are in lower tax brackets. Instead, that number is not only zero, it's been a negative number. Wisconsin taxpayers have had to pay roughly $2 billion more than was necessary because Republicans are still having this temper tantrum about the Affordable Care Act passing about 12 years ago now. And so again, $0 to expand Medicaid, strengthen Badger Care, provide more coverage for Wisconsin workers and their families so that they could pay for tax cuts for the very wealthy. Needless to say, Governor Evers said that, you know, when tax relief is delivered, he said it should be real, responsible, and targeted to the middle class. But through his spokesperson, he said the Republicans are doubling down on tax breaks for wealthy millionaires and billionaires instead of prioritizing relief for working families. The income tax cut will also be used, or the surplus, I should say, will be used not only for the income tax cut, but will also, some of it will be applied to property taxes because of the way that Republicans and Governor Evers agreed to provide more funding for schools, both public schools and voucher schools. It was going to, that deal would otherwise lead to a property tax increase. So they are applying some of the surplus to that, which is some good news on the property tax front. But it wouldn't have been necessary in the first place if Wisconsin Republicans didn't insist that you and I fund two parallel school systems in Wisconsin. Private schools are great for private money. The public money in this state budget should be supporting our long tradition of public education for every kid that wants an education, whether their family has means or not. And instead of supporting our local neighborhood schools, more and more of that money is going into unaccountable, less transparent, private and religious schools. Which is not to say they shouldn't exist. It's not even to say there shouldn't be some kind of a voucher program in some areas. You would find that when Democrats were in charge of the legislature, and if they were to get in charge again, they would not kill the voucher program outright, because you will have some Democrats who will support a voucher program. But the extent to which you, the taxpayer, are supporting this, and the way that it drains resources from your local public schools, should be very disturbing. And it's just not well enough known. It's not transparent enough on your property tax bill, just how much of your money is going to private schools to uphold families that were already paying out of pocket to go to private schools anyway. This wasn't benefiting many low-income kids who are going to some kind of a troubled school. No, this was, you know, these are support payments for people who are already benefiting from the tax cuts that Republicans have put in place for the past decade and are going to get even more now. Some Republicans actually wanted this to be worse. Senate Republican leader Devin Lemieux proposed going to a flat income tax rate of where everybody pays 3.25%. So it would be a little tiny tax cut for most families and a monster tax cut for millionaires and billionaires if you were to flatten it there. Look, if you want to put more money into working families, don't be looking at the very top brackets. Look instead at the lower brackets. If you're going to collapse a bracket, collapse it from the other side and say, all right, well, you don't have to pay income taxes until you get to such and such a threshold level. And of course, that only reinforces the Republican talking point of, oh, how come the poor don't pay taxes? As if they don't know about payroll taxes and sales taxes and the property taxes that are applied toward their rent. Working families in Wisconsin pay plenty in taxes, and they're getting less and less value for it all the time from a party that is working far too hard to cater toward the highest income brackets and the farthest fringe ideologies. But again, with gerrymandered maps, they can do that. They can run counter to what the majority of folks in Wisconsin would want. And by the way, we'll close with this. With a $7 billion surplus and lots of zeros in the budget and tax cuts to the very wealthy. They also made final approval to money for the University of Wisconsin system. At a time at a multi-billion dollar surplus, they cut funding for the UW system as part of a temper tantrum over the UW taking a stand against racism. That tells you all you need to know about this year's legislative session. We will be back with Kia Vakil coming up next. You're up north. Joining us now on Up North News, through the magic of magnetic recording tape or whatever the digital age version of that is, here's one Kia Vakil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom. Kia, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
All right, let's look at what we have coming up this week in terms of headlines from the week, the days past, and what's coming up ahead. The thing that's coming up ahead is the one-year anniversary of the Dobbs decision, which took away women's reproductive health care rights. What kinds of things are happening? We talked a bit about some state legislation being introduced by lawmakers who are with Dr. Kristen Lierley and others, but that's also being paired up with things happening with Democrats in Congress. What is going on?
Yes. So Democrats this week are introducing a couple bills that would, effectively re-implement the protections under Roe at the federal level. To be clear, those bills are unfortunately not going to pass in the House, but it's what's called a message bill. Basically, they are messaging to people that they support abortion rights and reproductive rights. And at the same time, you have folks like Lindsey Graham talking about reintroducing his 15-week abortion ban. You have states pretty much rushing, states led by Republicans have rushed over the past year to ban abortion, are continuing to do that. And, so it's really becoming a tale of two very different countries right now.
It really is. And again, I emphasize for the Lindsey Grahams out there, all we heard for years was this should be a state by state issue. Mm-hmm. And yet the national ban is there without apparently any sense of irony whatsoever. The Democrats' bills, by the way, just some of the details from the Hill here say that they will enshrine the right to use birth control, protect women traveling out of state to receive abortion care, protect the providers from abortion-friendly states who would treat them, and expand online privacy protections so health and location data can't be used against someone. And that one resonates here in Wisconsin. Yeah. Because of what we learned about Republican gubernatorial nominee Tim Michaels supporting organizations that actually tracked women on their cell phones who visited certain clinics.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty scary what sort of technology exists and is being pushed by right-wing candidates, right-wing groups to, tracking periods, tracking, visits, tracking data. It's frightening. So a bill like that absolutely matters. And obviously this goes beyond just reproductive cycles. The surveillance issue right now is quite scary generally, but pretty scary if you're a woman who lives in a red state who, is of reproductive age and, may need an abortion. A bill like that would be hugely beneficial to women across this country. And in a, logical political climate, you would think that at the very least, something like that would pass, even if Republicans don't want abortion to be legal. You would think, they would support less, authoritarian measures like that.
Yeah, exactly. And again, because of, split control in Washington, as well as split control in Madison, all of these things that we're talking about, like you said, you called them message bills, and they set the groundwork for 2024. And I only say that to listeners to say that in 2024, when you hear certain politicians trying to moderate their positions, just look back at what they were working on here in 2023. And that takes us to what Republicans are doing about a budget plan in Congress. And there's a particular group of Republicans in Congress. As we learn more about what their budget wish list is, the more we see the harmful impact on Wisconsin families and others.
Exactly. So there is a group of House Republicans, 176 of them, which is about three quarters of the House Republican caucus. They're a member of this group called the Republican Study Committee, which is just kind of a boring way of just describing a group of people, like really conservative lawmakers. They every year introduce this their own budget proposal. It never, you know, it's so extreme that it rarely actually becomes law or never, but it's a good sort of mile marker for what they want to do. And what they want to do is they want to raise the retirement age for Social Security and Medicare. They do not say what that age would be. They want to reduce benefits for people who earn a quote higher salary before retirement. They do not say what that threshold should be. They want to make modest adjustments, quote unquote, to Social Security. They do not say what that means. So if you're catching a trend here, they want to cut the program without specifying how they're going to cut the program. And that's pretty clearly because every time they propose a substantial specific plan, they get roasted alive by Democrats, by activists, by ordinary seniors. And that's just one part of this bill. The bill also wants to, you know, kind of effectively privatize parts of Medicare so that some seniors would get a subsidy to cover private insurance that competes against traditional Medicare, which would just make costs more expensive or care more expensive. It would also make the Trump individual tax cuts, which mostly help the super rich, permanent, while doing not that much for ordinary Wisconsinites and Americans. It would, in a really strange addition, ban universal school free school meals, which have been shown to help avoid child hunger, improve academic performance, save families money. And it just goes on and on and on.
And by the way, the not wanting to put an exact number, but to say we're going to cut these things, that's also some political inoculation, as we saw the last time around when we saw Republicans here saying, we did not say we were going to cut that. We did not say we were going to cut that by that amount. Well, right. You're leaving the rest of us to do the math, but you've laid the trail of breadcrumbs pretty clearly as to what's going to get cut by how much, even if you won't tell us.
Exactly. I mean, they've learned the lesson that Rick Scott took a year to learn after he introduced his plan, that you do, like, if you set out specifics, you know, it's going to bite you in the rear. Mm-hmm. So they're not doing that, but they're saying they're going to cut it, which, you know, people aren't stupid. Like, a cut is a cut. People care about their benefits and they've earned them. People pay into Social Security and Medicare for decades. So to tell people in my generation, you know, that, oh, you might hit 70 or 75 or whatever age 180 guys in Washington and some gals decide is when you should get benefits, just after you spend generations paying into it, is pretty galling.
So on the flip side of that would be President Joe Biden, who is by and large, you know, like a lot of us, not doing a ton about 2024 just yet, but he is a candidate for reelection. And so last weekend in Pennsylvania, he did have a kickoff rally, again, under the theme of messaging, to say that between now and November 2024, here's what I stand for. What kinds of themes did he sound in that?
Yeah, so Biden was in my hometown of Philadelphia, where he held a rally in front of a crowd of union workers. And, you know, he kind of highlighted some of his achievements, the American Rescue Plan, the CHIPS and Science Act, and really took time to strike sort of a populist economic tone. He talked about how union workers built America, which he has obviously said before. He talked about income inequality. He talked about some of, you know, his efforts. You know, his American Rescue Plan saved pensions for hundreds of thousands of workers, including in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. There's the Inflation Reduction Act has prevailing wage requirements and apprenticeship programs. So, you know, effectively he's delivering an economic message. And, you know, that's pretty necessary because due to inflation, a lot of voters have this idea of the economy that it's in a recession or that it's, you know, worse off than it is. And that's not to downplay inflation. I see it every time I go to the grocery store. It sucks. But there are a lot of things that are, you know, under the surface that look really solid. And, you know, I think that's going to be a focus of his campaign, is to try to, you know, as inflation has cooled, is also to highlight the things that they've done really, really well.
Well, especially because, again, with a split control of Congress, as we've said before, nothing's going to get done in 2023-24, not much substantive. And so in 2024, it's going to be incumbent upon the incumbent president to say, hey, here's what we got done in 2021-22, you know, back when Democrats had the whole shooting match and all the things, because, you know, the memories are short. And so he's going to have to say, look, here's what I got done. Probably the most productive first half of a term in presidential history. What say we do that again? And so there's going to be a lot of reminders from the president between now and then, I'm sure.
Definitely.
Meanwhile, you've got on the Republican side right now, the person who seems most likely to be the nominee, but again, it's very early, is the twice impeached, now twice arraigned former president. And he did not have a great week. And before we get to his Fox interview, we should note that his poll numbers, while still stronger far and away than any other Republican, as we've said many a time here, as more things come out, as more time passes, there's still plenty of people that really like Trump, but not everybody who used to love Trump still loves him.
Yeah, there was a new CNN poll this week that showed, you know, his support among Republican voters and Republican-leaning independent voters dropped by 6 points over the past month since his indictment. And I want to be clear, this is just one poll. There have been other polls that have shown him kind of remaining static, but this poll also found, you know, broad support for the indictment. Found that a clear majority think he should end his campaign. 59% of all Americans, that's a huge number. You know, most people think he did something illegally. And, you know, even if he still, to be clear, he still holds a commanding lead in the primary. Even this poll shows him 21 points up on Ron DeSantis. And the 6% he lost did not go, none of them went to DeSantis. They went to Mike Pence. They went to Chris Christie. Like, so there is still, even though he's weakening, you know, this isn't really good news for Ron DeSantis. It's just Trump in the headlines all over again, because, you know, as reporters, you have to cover a former president under indictment for stashing nuclear documents. Like, yeah. And Ron DeSantis isn't taking him on. He's saying he would, you know, investigate the DOJ, or other candidates have said they'd pardon him. And so, you know, even if his support is dropping, no one else is really stepping up as a quote unquote leader to challenge him.
Not yet. And again, there's still a long way to go. But one of the problems Trump has in terms of trying to, you know, get back that love and feeling with some of the Republican base is he does these interviews like with Bret Baier from Fox News, where he can't stop confessing to you know, swiping nuclear secrets and keeping them in a bathroom, as the case may be. Or to Bret Baier's credit, really pressed him on his quote about hiring the best people, and yet he had this revolving door and all the trash talk afterwards. It seemed like a textbook class in how not to be interviewed as a candidate.
Yeah, that interview was remarkable. And that's not to give Bret Baier too much credit, but he, you know, did the bare minimum of actually grilling Trump a little bit. And, you know, Trump effectively admitted to hoarding those documents. I've seen multiple legal experts suggest that it's definitely going to be used by the prosecution, and that he did not do himself any legal favors. But, you know, Trump does not really think in that way. All he thinks about is appearing dominant and appearing tough. So, you know, maybe on that front he succeeded. But he also kept talking about 2020 being stolen, which we know is a huge electoral loser, that argument for him. No one outside of his hardcore base buys that. It cost Republicans the Senate last year, arguably. It cost them the governor's races all across the country. Yeah, it's just... Trump is Trump, and he's always going to be Trump. And, you know, he may pretend like he's not going to talk about 2020, or that, you know, he did nothing wrong with these documents. But, you know, then he goes on Fox News and admits it all.
Exactly. And he was also very coy about taking part in the first Republican primary presidential debate, which is going to be taking place this summer in Milwaukee. So there will be so much more to follow on this with Kia Vakil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom. Kia, thanks so much for your time. Have a great weekend.
You too, Pat. Thank you.
You can always read what Kiavakil is doing for us over at upnorthnewswi.com. He writes for Courier Newsroom. Courier Newsroom has 8 state-based newsrooms all across the country, including Up North News here in Wisconsin. Now, there's the Gander in Michigan, the Keystone in Pennsylvania, the Cardinal and Pine in North Carolina, the Copper Courier in Arizona, and more. You can find more there at Courier Newsroom, where Mark Jacob writes for us occasionally, and we'll be talking to him coming up at 7:30. But up next, today's history lesson and a little music break. We'll be back. You're up north. There has to be something broken about people who don't feel a sense of peace after hearing just a few seconds of George Harrison. His album Living in the Material World hit number one on this day in 1973. Give Me Love, the biggest track off of that one. On this day in 1962, Ray Charles was on top of the album chart with his landmark album Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music. I think we played an excerpt from there a couple of weeks back when the album was first released. Here's an interesting Wisconsin tie to this day in history from an invention standpoint. On this day in 1868, C. Latham Scholes, publisher of the Kenosha Telegraph, and someone who would serve in both the State Assembly and the Senate, received a patent for his invention, the type writer. Type, then hyphen, and then writer. Others were also working on a similar invention, but his creation a little later on of what's called the QWERTY keyboard is still in use today, with the top row there being Q-W-E-R-T-Y, after talking to stenographers and getting a feel for the letters that they use most. And so that Wisconsinite's invention is with us to this day.
I had absolutely no idea that was a Wisconsin invention. That's really cool.
Yes, there is a plaque downtown somewhere near Fiserv Forum or the Wisconsin Center in there that marks that. And so I'd known for some time there was a typewriter invention connection to Milwaukee. And then when I saw this yesterday, I didn't realize he'd served in the legislature and had all these other things going for him as well. So there you go. We learned a little something today. Charlie Daniels Band released a song that went that did pretty well for itself on this day in 1979. We had a live band playing up here at the Mallard Resort. Was it 2 weekends ago now? And I think they were from Chicago, but they had Kenosha in their name. I think Kenosha Kickers, was it? And it was 2 guitars and a fiddle. And of course they did. The Devil Went Down to Georgia. And this guy just did a fantastic job. You know, how often do you get to see that, where you're just sitting along the river and people are playing music and a fiddle player was making it happen on that song. Jason Mraz is 45 years old today, as I mentioned, born this day in 1977 in Virginia. Then here's one. It's a song I did not know was a remake, and yet the guy who did it first was instrumental in making sure that the remake did even better, and that it was this hit, which hit number one on this day in 1984. So now when I listen back to it, I go, okay, I can see now that had a connection to Nile Rodgers from Chic, and he heavily remixed it with Duran Duran, and then they turned it into a number one song on this day in 1984. Now, we seem to have a theme this week of young women who had landmark moments in their lives during this week. We talked about Dolly Parton and Madonna and things that happened in their young life. Well, this time around, on this day in 1987, a 15-year-old began singing in a mall in New Jersey. Her name was Tiffany. She started her mall tour this day in 1987. By November, she had a number one hit with this remake.
That's what they say when we're together.
course, was Tiffany with the remake of I Think We're Alone Now. On this day in 2015, Leon Bridges released his debut album, Coming Home. A tie into an earlier topic here, on this day in 1960, the Food and Drug Administration declares Enovid to be the first officially approved combined oral contraceptive pill in the world. And now we're looking at doing some terrible backsliding on the way that people can take care of their reproductive health. And on this day in 1991, Sonic the Hedgehog is released in North America on the Sega Genesis platform, beginning the popular video game franchise. That really brings back some memories, because I probably haven't played Sonic the Hedgehog since 1991. Now, you have a much more critical view of Sonic.
Yeah, you know, they did an amazing job designing a character and the music and the animations and everything to make Sonic super lovable, and that is amazing. However, it's a game all about going fast, and then you have to slow down and do a bunch of weird platforming stuff that I think just, it's weird. It's very stuttery, and there are a couple of games in the Sonic franchise that are among the worst games of all time just because they don't work.
But this was popular because it had, you know, good packaging and music and all of the surface features of something. I can't see where that's ever been successful before, where you take crappy contents and just put something shiny around it and it does better than a better product. That never happens.
Never.
So speaking of video games, and I should have grabbed it. It's out of camera range here. But sitting on the floor behind me is a Wii Fit board for a Wii games console. As we've been cleaning out the basement, there's things that we have to get rid of or figure out if we're going to fix them or sell them or what have you. The Wii console itself died a couple of years back, and I'm really glad we had it. I'm not much of a gamer, but I got it when we had our first grandchild, figuring we would learn some games together, and we did. He and you know, his brother have long since gone on. They are masterful video game players of things that we can't even conceive, but it was fun to play the games with them when they were young. The console's finally dead. We're not really looking to replace it. When they come, they basically bring their own, you know, consoles and things with them now. My question is, does anybody still do the Wii Fit? That's something that we actually did do for a while. I kind of liked it, just kind of got out of the habit. Is Wii Fit still a thing? Is Wii still a thing? Said the old man to the young producer.
Well, Wii is definitely still a thing because it was such a just cultural milestone in the world, getting the whole family from the youngest to the oldest off the couch together to do some gaming. And it is the least bit physical. Wii Fit a little bit more so. Now for the Nintendo Switch, they have Ring Fit Adventure, where you get like a resistance ring to put your controllers in. And that is much more of an actual workout.
Oh, that's interesting. Huh. One of these days, maybe we'll do a live show where we'll put on like a lapel mic and we'll just do the show that way. And we'll show off. We'll talk about all the exercise equipment we're using. That's actually never going to really happen. I know ourselves better than that. But anyway, so I've got this Wii Fit board. I've got to decide whether it's something you put up online and somebody will give you $5 for it, or if I just put it in Monday's trash. And then, let's see, over my shoulder here, I know Aaron and others can see where normally there's some family photos, is a stack of blank VHS tapes. You know, there's always the end of some era. And wouldn't you know, when I was finally stocked up on VHS tapes to record shows, movies, and news and things, nobody uses VHS anymore. So now I got about a dozen blank VHS tapes. Again, I got to figure out, is there a use any place for that? Or do you set them free? Did they just die out like Sonic himself at the end of a game? Much more in our second hour ahead. You're up north. We'll be back.